Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I'm your host, John Losimov. Joining me on this very first episode are John Lemongood. Say hi to everyone.
Yo.
And Mark Hoffmeyer.
Hi.
Now, most of you listening right now probably already know what Movies, Films, and Flicks is, but to those of you who don't, Mark, would you be kind of explain what Movies, Films, and Flicks is?
No, absolutely. We are an international conglomerate that specializes in shipping, plastics, and goat herding.
Goat herding.
But, you know, on our free time, we are a movies horror review. We actually just cover everything movies. We love being pretentious. We love covering the most obscure horror films imaginable. And we just come from a place of movie appreciation. Little known fact about us, there was a while when you could type in Dolph Lundgren bad movie, and we were the number one result on Google.
Wow.
Need I say more?
Really? So it wasn't the website's not just about Dolph Lundgren, right? It's like,
no,
it's like 80% Dolph Lundgren, pretty much.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in the beginning days, it would probably take me a couple weeks to write a post. So it was 80% Dolph Lundgren, because that's pretty much all I wrote about.
Right.
And then Lemongood here, we started talking, and we knew each other from back in the day. And he said, hey, man, I love to do movie reviews. So he joined up with me. And now it's probably...
The website is moviesfilmsflix.com. Like,
absolutely. Right, movies, right. Films... FLIX.com, movies, right. Films, and flicks. And I guess it just kind of stands for, you know, there's movies, there's films, there's flicks out there. We cover the good movies, we cover the great films, and we cover the flicks that are straight to DVD featuring Devin Sawa battling an alien.
Right. And this this podcast is basically just an extension of the website.
Absolutely. You know, we've been talking about it for a long time because John and I would be having these conversations about Event Horizon, director's cuts. And whether they were necessary or not. And then somehow we'd break off into a tangent. And we were just like, you know what? We should probably record this sometime. So here we are.
Here we are.
Ready to roll.
So I'll say something out loud just so people understand that there's another human over here. But that's exactly it. It's not just your passion and bro crush and man crush Monday on Dolph Lundgren. It's we are celebrating the general word vomit flow of thought that goes through our heads when we are overanalyzing everything that we ever see. From Spin Kicks to Wes Anderson to 80s camp gore-tastic horror movies. It's
as long as Dolph Lundgren is somehow involved, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Well, we all know he's behind the Jason Voorhees mask in Friday the 13th. Let's be real.
Right. So, if the website is 80% Dolph Lundgren, would it be fair to say that the other 20% is Kurt Russell?
Yeah, absolutely.
listen, only guys. Recently. Yeah. Only recently.
Yeah. Recently. But listen, guys. Kurt Russell is probably the most underrated actor in the history of cinema.
Right.
Whether it be
human.
His work...
Underrated human.
Whether it be his work with John Carpenter. I mean... He probably wears a hoodie, an executive decision, better than anybody has ever worn a hoodie.
Better than Eminem.
He doesn't get credit for that. So I recently wrote a post about the best sleeveless shirts of Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
It hit big. Like, it was popular. It kind of shows that there is a market out there for Kurt Russell, and they're hungry for sleeveless pictures of Kurt Russell.
And I mean, to be clear, when you made your best sleeveless Kurt Russell movies list, it was basically the best Kurt Russell movies list if you exclude The Thing.
Well, let's go to the list. The article is on moviesfilmsflix.com, obviously dated December 3rd, 2014. The first entry is Jack Burton in Big Trouble in Little China.
let me start off by saying that Jack Burton is probably my favorite blowhard of cinema. I mean, the guy, he knocks himself out. He throws his knife away. He's not the hero of the film. His partner's the hero of the film.
Right.
But yet he is just such, like, I feel like Will Ferrell ripped him off a lot in that he is so confident in his ability to be a blowhard that he pretty much succeeds in everything he does. And so I had to add as the number one Jack Burton's sleeveless shirt in Big Trouble in Little China.
Right.
It would be fair to say that his character was never confident about doing anything throughout that movie that worked except for kissing the girl and catching a bottle flying in his face. Other than that, everything else that he went out and set to do ended up turning out tragically, or he had to have his butt saved by the other characters.
And the best part is when he kissed the girl, he had lipstick on his face for the rest of the movie.
Yeah. Which was a big fumble, but it really worked out gloriously. He can own being a clueless character in about as manly, awesome way as you can.
Absolutely. And you know what, though? He actually, you know, he threw the knife that missed Lopan. Spoiler alert. Yeah. And then Lopan throws the knife back. He catches it. Then he kills, like, the ultimate evil that's going to destroy the world and take his women. The guy comes through in the clutch, and that's why he's such a popular character, is he has his faults, but he also has this courage to face, you know, or maybe stupidity or maybe blowhardness, but to face off with the ultimate evil and win.
I don't know, it's kind of an aside, but like my favorite scene from that movie is like they had just taken that liquid or that medicine from that guy, and they're all just they're waiting in the elevator, and they're all smiling and they're all happy, and Kurt Russell just, for some reason, it always makes me laugh. Like, man, I don't know why, but I feel really good right now. And then the guys are just smiling and nodding along, like, yeah,
I'm feeling invincible.
You know, just while we're at it, to be clear, in almost every movie that Kurt Russell does, I just said it about this movie, but it really applies to just about everything. He never really knows what he's doing in any of these movies that we're going to bring up. And by the way, that includes The Thing. Even though he was game-faced serious the whole time, those guys didn't know how to handle the situation at all. So he's never been in a movie where he knew how to handle a situation except for Poseidon, and everyone hated that role.
And I guess he died really violently. But hey, going back to Big Trouble in Little China, during that scene in the elevator, you got to watch the guys in the background. Like, they really sell it. Like, I've watched that scene 100 times, and so I've started to notice the guys in the background, and they're hilarious, man. That scene on YouTube, what, Kurt Russell feeling it, invincible in Big Trouble in Little China, that is pure movie gold. Right. And so that is why his sleeveless shirt made the number one in my list. All
right. It might too.
Moving on to kind of the second entry on the list was Snake Plissken from the Escape From series from John Carpenter, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he is just the ultimate eye patch wearing badass who spouts one liners, speaks in a monotone voice, and plays basketball really well. I mean, the guy can quick draw and kill 6 people, and he can make a shot from half court. And you know what? If he had sleeves, I don't think he could have done any of that. Like, his sleeveless shirts are the key to his success in Escape from New York and Escape from LA.
I sort of feel like that's Jack Burton after Jack Burton did about 15 years at Leavenworth. Like, all of a sudden he's not joking around as much, but it's really the same kind of guy. Because even in that movie, you know, people told him what to do. They're like, go to this island of New York and this weird little Batmobile aquatic thing. And so he shoots over to the island, and he really doesn't know where he's going. He's just wandering around, like, looking for clues to where to go. He's got his little sensor thing to find the girl. But he doesn't really know what he's doing in that movie either. It's Jack Burton plus prison time.
If it's Jack Burton plus prison time, how did he get the eye patch in prison? Do you think he accidentally stabbed himself in, like, a fight when he was trying to escape?
Here's my theory about the eye patch, about his eye patch in both movies. He doesn't actually need the eye patch. Like, his eye is just fine. He wears it just because. Like, to give, like, just a... to make it fair for his opponents. Like, he just blinds like one eye.
You know what it is? If they're choking each other, if he's choking the bad guy, and you know, in defense of the choke, they go for the eye gouge, they'll only think to go for one of the eyes. Yeah. So he'll always have a good eye. He'll just flip it up. Boom, I got this. And he'll just keep going.
Yeah.
Just keep strangling the bad guy.
You're a bad guy, and you're in a fight with Snake Plissken, and you luckily poke out one of his eyes, and then he switches his eye patch to his other eye, reveals he has a good eye, and shoots you. You know what? My last breath would be like, good move. I can't be angry about this.
He went without depth perception this whole time just for that one bazinga.
Like, the long con.
All right, guys. So the next movie you're gonna have to tell me about because I haven't seen it. He was in Overboard. Like, tell me about that movie. I didn't really.
Overboard.
I talked about it, Levengood, because.
So, first off, just to be clear, I haven't seen this movie in probably 15 or more years. Mark, I assume the same. Yeah. At least, right? Yeah, okay. But so this poor schlub, he's like a carpenter. He does some work in some rich woman's house. She basically stiffs him because it didn't come out exactly the way that she wanted it to. And then later, she falls overboard from a boat, has amnesia. He bumps into her, and he fools her into thinking that she's his wife. And that way, he's going to make her work as a wife, taking care of him and his kids, until she works off the money he owes. So this is already a Jack Burton bonkers movie. This is Jack Burton 15 years before Big Trouble in Little China. This is all the timeline of one character that we've been covering.
Right.
Yeah, so this is basically Jack Burton before he started driving a truck.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, this is probably his first marriage. And the reason I picked it is in the film, as Levengood knows here, that I'm a big Justified fan. And in that show, there is a lot of denim. There's a lot of chambray shirts. And
Canadian tuxedos.
Exactly, Canadian tuxedos. And I live my life by the chambray and the Canadian tuxedos. And in this film, he wears a sleeveless denim shirt. And it kind of just sums up Kurt Russell. He's always looked construction worker strong. And for some reason, he can pull off a denim sleeveless shirt with massive hair, and everyone still just thinks that he is just the toughest dude ever.
I feel like Levengood could probably pull off the sleeveless denim shirt.
Oh, absolutely. But he's also 6'2 and 250, so like people saying stuff about him.
Our audience doesn't know that, all right? I mean, this big on the screen, so they don't
know. It's like, hey, bro, denim's out. What are you doing?
It's like I'm looking for Roddy Piper to have a street fight in an 80s movie.
All right, so guys, if I'm walking down the street, and I see Kurt Russell back in the day wearing a sleeveless denim shirt, and I'm wearing a denim shirt, I'm going to rip off the sleeves immediately. I'm not going to do the Hulk Hogan shirt rip-off. I'm going to do the Hulk Hogan sleeve rip-off.
You're strong, then, because I thought only Kurt Russell would be capable of that physical feat.
I'd have to buy a scissors from, like, a drugstore.
So, but, hold on. You're walking down the street. You see Kurt Russell. You immediately stop and go into the drugstore and get a pair of scissors.
And then I return the scissors after I cut the sleeves off.
And Kurt Russell's waiting there the entire time.
Right. You kind of gave him the timeout signal, and he doesn't know what's up until you come out without the sleeves.
But I guarantee you, when I bust out of that drugstore, and this is the 80s, that's why I'm saying drugstore, yeah. Kurt Russell looks at me, he would give me a head nod.
Right.
Like the bro nod? Just
yeah. He'd be like, I understand.
All right. Oh. All right, so the next entry is from a movie I have seen, Captain Ron. Kurt Russell plays Captain Ron Rico.
Also with an eye patch, to note the Jack Burton timeline.
And right. And now, listen to this. Now, John talked about how he never has a plan. I just want to tell you about this little exchange in the film. So he's on this boat, and he's chartering it for a family, and he's talking it to the wife or the mom and the family. And here's how it goes. Captain Ron, I was wondering, are we going to go to any more human-type places? Then Captain Ron's like, well, have you heard of St. Croix? Caroline's like, yeah. He's like, well, we're going to an island to the left of it. And she's like, what's it called? Ted's.
Ted's!
Yeah. He's making it up. It's not called Ted's. He has no idea. He's just taking the boat around. He's kind of hanging out. He is living the Kurt Russell lifestyle.
This is after Snake Plissken got acquitted, and then he changed his name to Ron Rico. And in his retirement, he had to pick up some extra work.
Right.
I mean, it's like 10 years after Escape from New York, so it makes perfect sense.
But as a kid watching this film, I remember the scene where he's working with the young kid, and the kid tries to take a sip of the beer. He's like, if you want one, grab your own. I thought Captain Ron was the coolest dude ever, but he's actually pretty irresponsible. But as a kid, I'm like, I want this guy to be the captain of my boat. I used to look at pictures of, like, boats. And be like, I'm going to go around the world. And, you know, he was my hero back in the day, Captain Ron. And the sleeveless shirts he wore were, I mean, pretty epic.
So like, you said every time you saw a boat, you thought about Captain Ron?
Well, not like that. If I saw, like, a big sailboat, I would envision going around the world, like, traveling around it with, like, a salty guy that, you know, you get new adventures with.
Because I could just imagine you watching Titanic being like, man, this movie needs some Kurt Russell.
Listen, the Titanic would not have sunk if Captain Ron was the captain.
He would have probably... Don't you think he would have caused the...
he would have gone the wrong direction.
Oh, that's true. They wouldn't even...
And completely missed it, but ended up in Ecuador.
Okay.
They just got monkey. I just imagine just monkeys crawling all over their head for some reason, right when they hit the shores of Ecuador. Like, there are monkeys waiting on the beach for them.
And Kathy Bates, you know, in that movie, is just like... I don't know. I can't do a Kathy Bates impersonation, so never mind.
Oh, no. We'd all be a greater man if we could. But no.
Wait, you want to hear it? Here, this is my Kathy Bates impersonation. Oh dear. Hey, I'm Kathy Bates.
Wow. You know, for a second there, I thought that was Kathy Bates.
The only way, Mark, that you could pull off a Kathy Bates impersonation is if you took a sledgehammer to one of my ankles. That's about the only way it would work.
I do wear a lot of flannel like you wore in Misery, so... I'm halfway there.
You got to start eating a lot more pancakes every day, buddy, if you want to fill that flannel right.
Bro, I love pancakes.
So the next movie we have, Kurt Russell isn't the only one wearing sleeveless shirts. He co-stars with someone who has his own illustrious history of sleeveless shirts. The movie we're talking about is Tango and Cash.
Now, oh, man. I mean, Tango and Cash is... Starsky and Hutch, but in a prison, R-rated, super serious and violent, and nothing like Starsky and Hutch.
Dude, so I got to come clean. Like, when I saw that on the list that you put together, I was so excited. I remembered how much I loved it as a kid, but I haven't seen it in 20 years. So I really don't remember much about it other than when they were going through those the electrical things on the roof. That's about all I remember. But I remember knowing that that movie was awesome. And so, kids, that's the thing to keep in mind. Even if you don't remember it, you know it was awesome. It's like...
I have a quick question for you. Like, I feel like it's one of those movies I never want to watch again. Like Surf Ninjas. I feel like Surf Ninjas is probably the greatest film ever. But I know if I watch it again, I'm not going to like it.
You're not going to like Leslie Nielsen as an evil samurai again.
Exactly. So maybe what I'm getting at is, guys, if there's a really bad movie that you think is great that you watch as, you know, a kid, you know, maybe think twice about watching it again.
I do the same thing with good movies, actually. Like, I've only watched Zodiac once, and, like, I know I don't want to watch it again.
Yeah, oh, that's an amazing movie, man.
Great movie, but I've never watched it again.
Like, it is an amazingly slow-paced movie.
I just watched Nightcrawler with Jake Gyllenhaal, and after Prisoners and now this, it's kind of like a Taxi Driver type ripoff, but I could see him win an Oscar this year.
Really? Speaking of Taxi Driver, how ripped is he in those ads for that new movie he's doing?
Oh, where he's the boxer?
Yeah! He's pulling a straight Christian Bale, man. He's going from skinny as a rail to beast mode.
Well, he was a... You remember him in Jarhead. Like, that was... Like, he got pretty buff that movie, too, right?
He was steadily big in that time frame, you know, and loving other drugs and stuff. But that... when he was a cop, why can't I think of it? End of Watch.
End of Watch.
Right.
He was big in all those movies. He was just consistently like that. But then he pulled a Dallas Buyers Club, sunk it all in, and now he's coming out ripped as ever.
Do you know why I think Kurt Russell doesn't get the appreciation he deserves? And I wrote about this with Tango and Cash, is that in Tango and Cash, it doesn't, like, he hasn't been lifting the weights like Sylvester Stallone. He just looks like he's been carrying drywall around for 2 years. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Kurt Russell is construction worker strong. So, like, he was never like the, I don't think he ever was that much of a method actor either. Like, like, he always looks the same in every role. Basically, maybe his hair changes a little bit, but he's always just looked like the a construction working truck driver that would probably stab you in the back if you weren't looking during a bar fight.
He's probably wearing an eye patch.
Except for Poseidon. Every movie except for Poseidon.
Yeah, and he died violently in that one, so I guess it's like a...
No, I can see where you're coming from. Harrison Ford is kind of, to a certain degree, the same way. Like, he's always kind of had, like, the same stature and build, like, consistently throughout the years.
No, I think you're right, and I think that's why maybe they appeal to the masses, because they've just always been the everyday guy. And actually, if you look at Kurt Russell's film Soldier, he actually, like, hit the gym for that, but that movie was a total dud. I think the general public was like, what? He's ripped. I don't like it.
Right.
Okay, just to be clear, that movie was awesome, though. He might have said 18 words in that whole script, and he owned every scene, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. You know, they're making a Soldier 2.
Let them make Soldier 8. I will watch all of them.
I was joking. I'm sorry, man.
That wasn't fair.
All right, so since we're talking about actors who got ripped for their roles, an actor who recently got ripped for who's been recently getting in and out of shape is Chris Pratt. Like, on his TV show Parks and Recreation, he plays a kind of a, not fat, but he's definitely not in shape. But
he's a schlub.
Yeah, yeah. In his recent movies, though, like Zero Dark Thirty and Guardians of the Galaxy, he's gone ripped. And mm-hmm. The reason why I mentioned Chris Pratt is because you wrote an article, like, for the 2014 Magnificent Seven. Chris Pratt is actually going to star in a remake of the Magnificent Seven.
Yeah, you know, I kind of found that interesting. Now, Antoine Fuqua has directed Denzel Washington in Training Day. And The Equalizer is doing a remake of a remake of The Seven Samurai.
You actually picked like your own like unique seven to put.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I kind of went through the 2014 characters, and I kind of did a unique list of seven people who I would like to stand next to as we're being attacked by thousands of goons at a village or a feudal Japanese village. And
at a village or a feudal Japanese village.
Yeah, I mean...
just to narrow it down. In a village.
I mean, there are some pretty big differences. I mean, if I'm in a village of grass huts, if I'm in a village of, you know... What are they? Hutches? I don't know. Straw hutches? I don't know. But all right, so without further ado, my first pick, which I think is a little unfair and I was a little worried about putting in, was Lucy, Scarlett Johansson. Now, I think if we brought her into the film when she has 100% of her brain, it wouldn't be fair. Because I guess one swipe of the hand and the thousands of unlucky goons would be dead. So I'm thinking we'll use her when she's using about 27% of her brain. She's still dangerous, but she's not like turning into a goo that can alter time and life. So, you know, basically she's still Lucy, but she's deadly.
Right.
I let's just stop and imagine exactly who's ravaging this village. Can we, before we address the blonde and how much percentage of her brain that she has, because it occurs to me that when you're defending a village, you either have, you know, filthy peasants with sticks attacking you, or you have a werewolf, some feudal legion coming to take over, or some fantastic ogres or something. Like, it's
here we go.
It's very extreme. It. So what's she defending us against exactly?
Okay, so we have El Guapo's posse from Three Amigos.
Okay.
All right. And then we have
an army of
what's
trolls.
That? The who?
An army of orcs.
An army of orcs and all the gangs from the warriors.
Okay.
Aside from the warriors.
Okay. All right.
Now Ivan Drago.
Yeah, Ivan Drago.
Is their commander.
Ivan Drago is the leader of all of this. And he has his boxing gloves on for some reason.
and an eye patch.
Yeah, and an eye patch. So, I mean, there's some pretty tough people that they're going against. And also all the news crews from Anchorman are running in.
Okay.
They actually don't add any more difficulty to the fight with everything else in there.
You could catch a trident from out of nowhere.
Okay. That's right. Brick might catch you with a trident.
Just so, watch out for the ghost of Stonewall Jackson.
You know, I worked on that, right? You know, I was there for those days.
Oh, yeah. What scenes did you work? Or like?
Yeah, I was there during the fight scene. If you look in the background with all the cabs, I was the guy coordinating all the cabs driving around during the fight scene. If you look really close, you'll see me walking in the background during one scene.
Oh, really?
I guess production didn't tell me that we were rolling. So,
real quick, for those of you who don't know, our very own Mark Hoffmeyer here, he actually is a PA for movies and TV shows.
He's a physician's assistant for movies and TV shows.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's actually part of
I deal with all the background and then... Yeah, so I was there during that day, and the Stonewall Jackson ghost was pretty deadly. So
right.
But I think Lucy and her 27% of her brain could figure him out. You know what I mean?
I want to see that fight. Lucy against the ghost of Stonewall Jackson.
I mean, yeah, gooey Neo Matrix Lucy.
What would he say? By Zeus's beard, this is a piece of black goo flying at me. The next on my list, and pardon me if I destroyed this name, but it's Emily Blunt from Edge of Tomorrow. Her character's name is Rita Vrataski. And I loved Edge of Tomorrow. I thought it was the blockbuster of summer. Tom Cruise retweeted me.
Oh, man.
And, man, that was a really bad pat on the back. I'm sorry, guys. But, no, I thought she sold tough without being tough. Like, you actually bought her character. And I like that about her. And so she could actually survive each day and come back. And I think she would be a perfect addition to the Magnificent Seven of 2014. Also, I'd really like to see her in that robot suit just blow away one of the guys from El Wapo's gang. Like, just like, have you seen Hot Shots Part 2 where she shoots that guy with the huge gun? And he's like, that's a heck of a gun. And he's splattered against the wall. Like, I want to see that.
The only thing I remember from Hot Shots Part 2 is Saddam Hussein melting.
And the scene where they're on the airplane and they're skydiving and they're like, Geronimo, Geronimo. And then Geronimo comes up and goes, me.
No, to Emily Blunt, I say yes to her in every movie and every role she's ever done. And yeah, you know what? However tall she is and however she doesn't weigh, to be honest, she's a dainty thing, in shape or not. Like, I totally bought it. They sold that perfectly. They packaged it just right. It wasn't all glittery bubblegum pink overdoing it. No, it was perfect. I want her to save my village from Ivan Drago and the orcs.
And you know what I liked? You know how many roles you've watched where actors pretend to be tough? Like, I'm thinking Adrian Brody from Predators and Jessica Biel from The A-Team, where they convey power and authority by being, like, kind of bitchy or speaking like, I don't know where these predators are at, but they're close. You know, like, she pulled off tough without acting tough, and I feel like that's what most tough people are. And that leads me to – sorry, John, I took your job. Eva Green from 300. She is probably the badass of the year. So, all right. So imagine this. You're one of the goons, right? You're one of El Wapo's crew, and you're running into a village. And you see Eva Green. You're like, all right, easy pickings. Then she cuts off your buddy's head, and then she kisses your buddy's head. That's pretty deflating right there.
I mean, because it's Eva Green, I'm jealous I'm not getting kissed, but I guess I'm not jealous that I wasn't beheaded.
I'd be disturbed and kind of slightly turned on at the same time, but I'd be confused. I'd be like, oh, I don't know.
And, you know, like, that it's basically the Xenia on a top thing from Goldeneye. It's like, she just killed that guy with her legs, but she looked damn good doing it. Should I be jealous, or would that suck?
I feel like I would just be confused, and then she would kill me while I was confused.
I just think that you know, like Emily Blunt, she's completely different because she really chewed up the scenery, but in a good way. She knew it was an over the top film, and she just owned it. And I think that's why the film was such a success. I don't know. I just bought her as being the ultimate badass, the right hand man to a god king who was in Lost and got killed off, but. No, I think she was one of my favorite characters of the year, and I would gladly defend a village with her slicing off people's heads left and right.
I would gladly stand between her and the village as she defended that village.
She's like, Levengood, get out of the way. Like, well, I got this.
It's like, get your tight end ass out of the way.
So the next person on my list is Chris Evans from Snowpiercer as a character Curtis.
Best one on the list.
I mean, he leads this amazing revolution. And, you know, I don't want to do spoilers, but my favorite scene of the year is when the people from the back of the car meet these axe-wielding, fish-blood-loving goons And it is the most intense, smart, weird Korean thing out there. And he fought his way all the way to the front of the train. He wasn't even supposed to. And so I think he could, and he fought in tight quarters. And that's what this village, this feudal village is going to need is a guy who can fight in tight quarters. So
because that's what you were thinking when you made the list.
Yes. So that would be Chris Evans from Snowpiercer. He'd be one as well.
We need to pause right here. It doesn't matter if you've seen Snowpiercer or not. I feel like I paid very close attention to this movie. And when they were dipping the axes in the fish blood, right, in their weapons, and they're passing it around, I was thinking almost by default, like, oh, because it's poisonous, because it was from the outside world. But wait, no, they just said the outside world just froze and everything died. Why were they dipping their weapons in fish blood before they tried to kill Chris Evans and his poor people?
I looked at it as a lot of these Korean films, he's directed before, like The Host. And then if you look at the other ones, I Saw the Devil, Old Boy, they just have some really weird moments in them that don't make much sense, but they're beautiful. So I kind of chalked it up to that. Like, I think I didn't even think about it. I just love the idea that one day they're like, hey, do we have what are we going to? You know, what are we going to dip this axe in? And they're like, oh, let's just use a fish. And they're like, yeah, that's great.
Why are we dipping our axes in anything?
But, like, imagine if you saw that, right? You're Curtis. All right. No, actually, you know what? Maybe Curtis will use that against the orcs. Like, they're running in and they see this guy slicing a fish with an axe. Like, you'd think twice, John.
Okay, to be very clear, if someone was taking time to dip their weapon into a fish, that's when I'd be tackling them. What a way to let your guard down. The blade isn't even aimed at me, and it's encased in a fish. That is when I'm drop kicking you right now. That's...
Hey, what happened to Hank? I tried to do that fish bit again, and it finally caught up to him.
That's right. Yeah, John just drop kicked him in the head. No, but they did that. They had their game face so well when they were doing that scene, and it was so well scored and so well lit and so well done and so well everything, right, that when I saw it, I swear, I was just thinking, oh, right, because the fish is poisonous. I just, like, made that up in my own head. Like, I bought something that didn't even exist. Like, yes, this makes sense. And then 3 or 18 swings of the axe later, I'm just thinking, wait a minute, it's just cold out.
The fish. Well, maybe they knew that he was going to slip on it later. And so during their fights, they like to throw a lot of loose fish around. So if the tide of the battle changes, you know, it's like marbles from Home Alone. Like, they know that people be slipping on fishes left and right. maybe they're thinking ahead. Maybe it's proactive fighting, you know? Muhammad Ali used to throw fish down in the middle of the ring, hoping that his opponents would slip.
Yeah. I don't think that's regulation boxing.
That was, the...
Float like a butterfly, yeah. Slip like a fish.
Yeah. And next in line, I got Iko Uwe, who is Rama from The Raid 2. And if you've seen The Raid, it's probably one of the best action films out there in the last 10 years. And there's a scene in the beginning of The Raid 2 where he fights off about 30 prisoners in a bathroom. So I figured there'd be a lot of close quartered fighting, and to have a guy named Rama just throwing straight spin kicks. And basically, he fights through 2.5 hours worth of movie. And so his endurance and his athleticism, like, even as the thousands of hordes are coming in, he's still going to be throwing bows left and right. So, the dude's got cardio, the dude's got spin kicks. He can use his elbows, knees, heels, toes, head.
So he'd be
biceps, triceps, femur. It's a great. he can use everything.
He would be perfect for defending a village. He could just, like, run around the perimeter and just taking people out as he runs by.
Basically. Yeah, absolutely. he's a little weapon. He's a weapon. You go ahead.
I'll go for it.
In the time, okay, anyone who's ever seen or heard of Roadhouse, in the time that Patrick Swayze can throw two jabs, a roundhouse, and a spin kick, Iko has already stabbed 18 people, broke 3 necks, and overall killed about 40 people. Just in the time of 2 jabs, a roundhouse, and a spin kick. It's so fast how this guy is dismantling the life that God put on this earth. It's his gift.
A whirling dervish of violence.
He is entropy. If you ever took Physics 101, he is entropy.
So all these people defending these villages, like, is there going to be enough people to kill for, like, all these defenders? I feel like
no.
I feel like people are going to be competing for, like, people to kill. Like, no, I'm
after
like, this is my 10 guys.
Defeated all the bad guys. What we do is we go, like, old school, like, blood sport, kickboxer, the Quest, Van Damme movies, and we just have a free-for-all. We have Mortal Kombat, and we just watch them take each other out. Right. So I'd watch that movie.
So they kill everybody, but then, out of nowhere, the attack to block aliens come out of nowhere, right?
Yeah.
And then all Bane and his army come out.
Hey, Batman.
And then...
that sounded like Bane the Muppet.
Yeah. Well, they kind of was.
And then those squirrely Euro trash vampires from 30 Days a Night come out.
Oh, no.
They're gonna and meeting them... will be Frank Grillo from The Purge 2. He plays a character called Sergeant. And I thought Purge 2 was a big pile of garbage. But from his work in the, you know, Warrior, Captain America 2, I mean, Frank Grillo was the best part of Purge 2. And he went out on a night where all death is legal. And he did a pretty good job. So I figure, you know, in the midst of things, when it's all going down, you got Frank. And you know what? He kept, like, four really nagging people alive. He doesn't have any of those people now to hold him back. So I think he would be pretty great battling those little creatures from Attack the Block.
I don't have anything good to say about the Purge Anarchy. I'm sorry. I watch everything. I watch just shamefully bad movies that I wouldn't want to admit to my family that I've watched just to watch them and be shocked. I fell asleep watching The Purge Anarchy two nights in a row.
See, I've only
I don't fall asleep to anything. I watch all sorts of stuff. I fell asleep twice.
Nice.
That's all I have to say. Purge Anarchy. Don't be a fan. Don't be a fan.
don't watch it, guys. Don't see it on Redbox and be like,
I've never heard of more glowing.
It's $1.20. I'll rent it.
But if you want to see The Matrix and The Matrix Revolution on a train starring Chris Evans, then definitely go ahead and watch Snowpiercer.
And then to finish it off, since you handed me The Matrix, I'm going to add John Wick, Keanu Reeves. In the movie, they're like, he is the guy you call to kill the boogeyman. And I feel like who is the boogeyman? Like, I feel like he's the Nightmare Before Christmas. Like, if he's bothering people, did John Wick kill him? Yeah. But in the movie, I think the body count's like probably 2,000, and he's just spinning around shooting people in the face with his. Like, it's a ridiculous film, and it uses puppy death as the motivation, which is pretty shameless. But I love the world building, and I think Keanu after Point Break. Speed, The Matrix. I'm not going to say Chain Reaction. he was awesome in that movie, and it's going to become a cult classic. And I mean, the guy, he goes up against 50 people and he comes out alive. So, I mean, I feel bad for anybody attacking John Wick.
Well, especially his dog. This was basically financed by the SPCA to teach people not to mess with other people's pets. Because the plot line, like, if I was storyboarding this, if I'm pitching this movie to you guys and you're the studio execs, it's like, look, Keanu Reeves plays this hitman, right? But he's retired. And his wife dies, I don't know, from something. But she leaves him a dog, I don't know, for company. And then these Russian mobsters kill the dog, so he kills 60 of them. That's the movie. They kill the dog for really no reason at all. And then he goes and kills every single Russian that those Russians knew in their families. And it was a lot of fun. It seemed to be very practical gun work, might I add, for his puppy vengeance.
Well, little known fact, the directors he had worked with before, he worked with one of them actually on Point Break, and then he worked with them later on in The Matrix, which is the same thing with The Man of Tai Chi. He worked with that guy as a stuntman on that film. So, like, yeah, basically, if you want to direct a movie or star in a movie, be a stuntman in a Keanu Reeves film.
Right. I will say that John Wick probably had my favorite scene out of all the movies I've seen this year. There's in the beginning of the movie, you know, the mob boss, like this really dangerous mob boss calls John Leguizamo, because John Leguizamo just hit his son. And John, the mob boss asked him on the phone, like, why did you hit my son? And John Leguizamo goes, because he stole John Wick's car and killed his dog.
And the mob boss goes, that is just like, shit.
Mob boss goes, oh. And then he hangs up. It was just the greatest reaction I've ever seen.
Somebody who probably has every mob fiscal year has probably shot someone in the head in front of his staff just to make a point, and the answer is oh.
And you know what, guys? Shit. John Leguizamo might be the most underrated actor.
He is.
Aside from Kurt Russell. Now, I'm going to write a post about John Leguizamo next, but I don't think he really wears sleeveless shirts.
No,
Tu Wong Fu. He never wore sleeves the whole time. And Tu Wong Fu, thanks for everything, Julie Newmar.
Well, he was in a dress. He was in a dress, though, right? Like, it was
no sleeves, and not anybody. Or Patrick Swayze, might I add. Or Wesley Snipes.
Ooh.
Oh, no, Patrick was covering the guns. Why am I talking this much about that movie?
I don't know. I completely forgot about that film.
Somebody hit reset on my brain.
I never watched it. Have you watched that movie?
Yeah, I've seen it a few times. I had a single mother, so I saw it a bunch.
Okay. I've always seen it on TV, funny enough. I've never seen the uncensored version. I can't imagine the uncensored
version. I gotta tell you, Patrick Swayze as a drag queen, like, never bought it, never thought it was cool. John Leguizamo, he fooled me. Wesley Snipes really embraced the humor of it, though. Yeah. He had a lot of fun. And my God, with those deltoids, you better have a good sense of humor, because you're not walking into a bar with guys saying, oh, I want a piece of that. No, absolutely not. They were like, I've got $50 on him in Fight Club.
Hey, guys. Well, before we reach the end of our podcast here, there was I wanted to touch upon like a movie that came out recently. I know one or two or like both of you might have watched it, Babadook. I wanted to get your quick thoughts on it. Like, what'd you guys think of it? For those of you who don't know, Babadook is a horror movie that came out straight to video, or like straight to video on demand. Like a theater release.
I mean, right now it's at 98% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's pretty high.
It's ridiculously high. It's a little Australian horror film. The woman who directed it, she worked on Lars von Trier's films, Dogville. And I think it's very confident. It's very creative. I think it does hit you over the head with the theme a little bit. But I'm not going to lie, man. I watched it, and I had trouble sleeping that night.
Really?
It's a psychological ringer. I don't know why it's become this critical darling. I think it's a good film, but it won Best First Feature from the New York Film Critics Award. It's good, man, but I liked Oculus better, which is a weird WWE-produced movie about an evil mirror. I guess, I don't know. I like that it's an original story. I think horror needs more of that.
Yeah.
So
as someone who likes horror movies, you would definitely recommend it.
Oh, absolutely. Right. I think it'll be coming up in discussions for years to come. But the way it's set, but you know what, though? All these critics are talking about the Babadook creature itself, which is this pop-up book, I guess is what you call it. And there's this really jerky demon that just is a total jerk.
Okay.
And, you know, you read it, and then he becomes a jerk. But the ending of the film really makes it impossible for a sequel, and I almost like that. But I feel like they're going to try to monetize on it and start making really bad sequels.
Yeah, it's the fate of every successful horror movie.
Really. You know, I'll say this is unusual because, like, Oculus, I loved it, you loved it, but that was really hit or miss. It was like a 1 or a 5 rating on Amazon for thousands of viewers. Whereas this online, everybody is just loving Babadook. Everybody has something great to say about it. You said yourself, it's irregularly high on Rotten Tomatoes, which is not nice to horror movies historically. So it says something. It says a lot. It's reaching out to a big audience.
I would recommend I think every horror fan should watch it. You should not watch it on a first date because your date will punch you right in the arm. Okay. But I don't know. I would. And you know what's weird? This is going to sound insane, but my wife and I, we watched As Above, So Below, and then The Babadook. Somehow I talked her into a horror doubleheader. And now As Above, So Below is about these people exploring the Paris catacombs in search for the Sorcerer's Stone. Oh, that's a Disney film. I don't know. They're looking for some sort of stupid stone. But let me tell you guys, the ending is very refreshing. And we went from kind of like happy and upbeat. And Levengood, we call him the horror czar, knows that I'm pretty annoyed by horror. And it didn't annoy me. And so we went from like this kind of happy thing to this absolutely bleak little Australian thing. And maybe that kind of messed with my mood a little bit. But yeah, I mean, watch it, enjoy it, but check out Oculus instead. I mean, it'll no, John, back me up on this. It's a WWE produced film.
I thought it was fantastically done. And I thought it was
about
magical.
An evil mirror, and it's really good, man. And it's really stuck with me. So I would recommend that as like the horror of the year. So
I mean, if you've ever had the flu or pneumonia or something, and you're basically you're an insomniac, you can't sleep, you're having these weird dreams when you're exhausted and you can't sleep. That's what this movie feels like when they keep shifting from reality to non-reality in Oculus. Like it tugs you along and it keeps your attention. So I appreciated it.
So to summarize your review of Babadook. Watch Oculus.
Yeah. And watch Babadook.
Watch Babadook if you have time.
Listen, it's a very good film, and I don't want to do any spoilers, but it really turns the genre on its head, and I appreciated that. But, you know, you can still appreciate a film and the art, but still not be that close to it. And I feel like that's the way I was with The Babadook.
Yeah, it wasn't Kurt Russell and Big Trouble in Little China.
No, absolutely. I mean, if the woman was wearing a sleeveless shirt the entire time.
Yeah. maybe an eye patch.
Just like selling leadership one severed sleeve at a time.
Well, and on that note, I think we reached the end of this podcast. Do you guys have any final thoughts? Any plugs you guys want to make before we sign off?
Yeah. Head to www.moviesfilmsflicks.com. MOVIESFILMSFLIX.com. Yeah. Tomorrow I have the top 5 horror films of the year going up. And I really recommend if you're a horror fan, I'm plugging John Levengood here. He has a horror index. And I mean, he has covered some mainstream, non-mainstream, and incredibly non-mainstream horror films.
Incredibly non-mainstream.
Yeah. And so... You know, check us out, read. I think there's a little bit something for everybody. And also, watch Boyhood. Any chance you get, watch Boyhood, because it is the best film of the year.
All right. So, to recap, if you guys want to read the articles that we discussed here today and more, check out moviesfilmsandflicks.com. For Mark and John, I've been your host, John. And we'll see you guys next time.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.